It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. And as I begin the program, I do want to remind you the easy way to reach out to the folks at Harvell & Collins, and I would strongly recommend that you do, give them a call, 252-726-9050. That's 726-9050. To find out more about this growing law firm, by the way, they've added new attorneys just recently, go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. As we begin the program, we have joining us today Cecil Harvell. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. How are you?
Doing well. You know, I'm looking here at the calendar. We're 2.5 months before we change the calendar. Things are changing. And I'm sure you're seeing a lot of that same situation there at your firm, Harvell & Collins.
Well, 2024. I guess that's where we're heading,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Lockwood, today I thought we would talk about trust planning. The topic of the day can be trust planning. You know, Lockwood, we at Harvell & Collins, I personally and several other lawyers there do a lot of work in the area of trust and estates. We enjoy it. It's a very rewarding, substantive practice, but it's also many times misunderstood. Our clients come in with different kinds of goals and objectives, and we have to kind of, if you will, kind of unwind a lot of the information that they have absorbed.
Uh-huh.
So let's kind of talk about that. First of all, Lockwood, you know, because we've been talking for so many years now, the two of us, that at Harvell & Collins, you know, we are going to do, we're going to prepare a trust for clients when the shoe fits.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to prepare a trust if it doesn't have a very defined purpose. What are we going to hang our hat on? For instance, do we have minor children here? Do we have children that are 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 years old? Well, absolutely, then those clients need a trust so that if something were to happen to the parent, the assets would be held back in trust and utilized for the minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a child that has special needs, Lockwood? Many times there are families and wonderful organizations in Eastern North Carolina that help families with special needs children. And absolutely, that is a trust that we prepare, known as a supplemental needs trust, that places assets in a hold pattern, if you will, again, for the benefit of the child that has special needs.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of trust also is utilized to not disqualify the child, which is many times even an adult, okay? I mean, I'm not talking about a minor child. They can be minor, but special needs, wonderful people grow up to be, you know, 50 years old as well,
right.
Lockwood.
Right.
And their assets are held in this trust, the purpose of which is to not disqualify them from any kind of other benefit that they might receive through either the government or grants or scholarships or things of that nature, so that the special needs of the child can be taken care of by the trust assets, but their general housing and food and the staples of life are taken care of by the benefits that are eligible for them in our society at whole. So right out of the gate here, Lockwood, you see two prongs that we can hang our hat on: minor children, special needs children. Another very common objective is the fact that, well, my child is not special needs, but my child has had some significant issues in their life.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some alcoholism, unfortunately, or some drug addiction, unfortunately. And I just don't feel that if my wife and I, if we were to die and things go out, you know, without any strings attached to this particular child, that would probably not be in the child's best interest. So we need to hold his or her assets back, hold them in abeyance, and kind of dole the monies out to this child until maybe at such time there's a complete recovery mm-hmm. from the addiction issues. And sometimes, as we know, Lockwood, there is a complete recovery. Now, let's keep moving, talking about different prongs that we can hang our hat on. One prong that comes up quite a bit with folks is, well, you know, Cecil, how about a state tax? Right. I'm really concerned about a state tax. And Lockwood, when we talk about that word, let's just go ahead and say there's death tax, estate tax, mm-hmm. inheritance tax. I mean, how complicated can we make it, okay? And the point is that all of those are synonymous for one issue, which is just tax upon our death. Whether right. we call it death tax, estate tax, inheritance tax, we really are talking the same subject matter, Lockwood. And the estate tax now will hit a family at the upper end of $12 million now is the exemption equivalent amount that can pass to the children without there being any estate tax, death tax, inheritance tax. So as one can imagine, Lockwood, we certainly have clients that have that net worth, and we know what to do in terms of their trust planning when we have a client with that kind of wealth. But by and large, here in eastern North Carolina, you know, folks with that kind of net worth are not the majority of persons.
Right.
They're the exception to the rule. And so most folks, Lockwood, don't have to worry about estate tax. Again, let me reiterate, if you're listening to the program this morning, and thank you for being a dedicated listener. I know there are many this afternoon, rather, there are many listeners that are very dedicated to our program. If your estate is less than the $12 million threshold, then there will be no estate tax. And so let's don't worry about something that's not going to be applicable.
Right.
What folks recall, Lockwood, you know this, is that there's this figure, $600,000 mm-hmm. that's stuck in people's psyche, and maybe it was $1 million or $600,000 or maybe $1.5 million. And folks are really in their psyche thinking of these lower numbers. And those numbers did apply, but that was several years ago. And our Congress has upped those numbers quite significantly. And now, as I said, those numbers float around $12 to $13 million. Okay.
So the other aspect, and I just want to make mention of this because you've said this on numerous occasions, Cecil, and of course we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I'm going to remind you, go to that website, harvellandcollins.com, spell out the word and. Cecil, you've said on numerous occasions, you just don't create trust willy-nilly just to satisfy the concerns of a client. Without first really identifying the benefits of those trusts. And you've said this on numerous occasions, that a lot of folks have come into your office concerned about, as you just mentioned, estate tax and the need, the possibility of creating a trust. And you've advised them. It's just unnecessary. You have said this over and over again. There's got to be a hook on which to hang the trust hat on.
That That's correct.
You have said that many times before. So you're looking specifically at a tool, not just a, if you will, a ramp. You're looking for an actual product that is going to satisfy either a current or a future need.
That's exactly right, Lockwood. And thank you for kind of parroting the language there and helping and saying it in your manner of expression. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. We just need, you know, it's like when you go to the toolbox. Do you need a Phillips head screwdriver or do you need a straight edge screwdriver?
Right.
Do you
right.
need a hammer? Do you need a set of pliers?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to hang our hat on a legitimate prong in order to take a client into a trust agreement. Okay, let's keep moving. We've talked about several of the reasons. And I'm saving a little bit of one of the ones that's talked about the most for last.
Okay.
But let's go here for a moment, Lockwood. Absolutely, we do trust planning. for folks who are concerned about the long-term care cost of, you know, a rehabilitation or a nursing home or something of end-of-life care expenses, which can be quite considerable. They can be $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 a month, and very few people can afford that kind of expense layered on top of owning their home and maintaining taxes and insurance and upkeep and life in general. And so they may very well talk with us about preparing a trust to mitigate the cost of these long-term care expenses to protect their assets, if you will, from the devastation of a long-term care expense. And those trusts, or that particular prong, is known as an asset protection trust. And we do a considerable amount of work in that area. There are things that our listeners should know that can be done to help protect our assets from that possibility if it were to come our way. And particularly, that's known as an asset protection trust. And it's a trust whereby assets are transferred, many times, of course, for the benefit of the children, so as to basically kind of get them off the radar screen, if you will, so that other benefits can be applicable for the person who is receiving long-term care. So that's a trust, Lockwood, that we prepare in our office significantly. The trust for the surviving spouse. We have so many clients, Lockwood, it's just society in general, and our work parallels society, that folks who are in a second marriage or third marriage, maybe they lost their first spouse to a disease or cancer or something of that nature. Maybe they divorced, but they've now remarried. They have children from a prior marriage, and they have agreed in this new couplehood, if you will, they have agreed that their assets will be used to maintain them jointly in their lifestyle, but that upon the death of either one of them, the assets would pass back to their respective children. So we have a husband who has two children from a prior marriage. Uh-huh. We have a wife who has two children from a prior marriage. And they now are wanting to set up an estate plan whereby assets pass back to their respective children, potentially maybe some asset, maybe the home place, the house, would pass to the surviving spouse, maybe some percentage, if you will, of a bank account or portfolio or something of that nature. Again, the facts would vary from client to client, but the bottom line, the theme is that the assets primarily want to float back to the respective children. Uh-huh. Well, when we hear these facts in our office, Lockwood, that's a prong. That's a place to hang your hat to create a trust for the benefit of those clients. Otherwise, the assets could pass very clearly to the surviving spouse. And then when the second spouse dies, Lockwood, those assets would pass just exclusively to the children of the second to die. And that's not the goal of these clients. They don't want all of the assets between the two to pass to one side of the family. They wanted them to go back to the respective children. And so those facts are facts that we hear quite often at the law firm, and as one would expect, they dictate the use of a spousal trust.
That is a spousal trust we're talking about, that term?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What we're looking at in the concept of trust from the very beginning, and I mentioned a few moments ago with you, Cecil, that you've been very specific, and I've listened and of course, over the years, absorbed your philosophy on the issue of trust. You've been very specific on that. They need to provide a real value before you go to the expense of creating one and the trouble. But the aspect of these trusts really are a representation of, if you will, long-term planning, planning for children, the care and the future of children of special needs or certain circumstances. You mentioned substance abuse, children that may not have the capacity to conduct business or handle the outcome of the estate. And then you've just mentioned a few moments ago, asset protection in the case of long-term care. You're not only taking care of the individuals who for whom you write the trust, but also by extension their family as well, so that they are not overburdened as a result of long-term expenses. And you are correct, they're very high. And now you're talking about a trust for surviving spouse. Again, taking care of the circumstances not only for the survivor, but also for the family members of the of that union, and be they direct relationship or indirect. I think this is an important aspect of this. What you're really talking about with trust is it's a form of long-term planning. Am I on target there?
Absolutely. It's a form of long-term planning, Lockwood, and it sets forth a structure, a tool in the toolbox that is utilized to meet these objectives. I mean, the objective can be we have a special needs child.
Right.
The objective can be, of course, we have minor children. The objective can be, well, we just have a child that has had some real twists and turns in their life, and we don't feel that they can receive their inheritance.
Right.
Or our objective is that I certainly want to provide something for my new wife, but I do want my assets to pass back eventually to my children, and as does she. She wants to her assets to pass back to her children.
Right.
So the trust is a tool in the toolbox that is meeting these particular objectives, and that's a great way to think about it.
You know, one question I have on the asset of the trust for surviving spouses. In that case, and I'm going to give you a scenario. We'll use the husband here in this case, dies, and he is the new family had moved into his household. And his children had been raised in that home, but now he and his new wife are living in the home. He dies. Is it established in this trust, is there a way through this trust that the wife can remain in that house and, if you will, maintain the house in some fashion, but upon her death, the house would then transfer to the husband's children? Is that one of those structures in that spousal trust component?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And another interesting twist on the spousal trust many times, Lockwood, is the fact that absent a prenuptial agreement between folks, absent that document, the surviving spouse in the state of North Carolina, depending on the years of marriage, has a percentage interest in the assets of the spouse, no matter what. So this comes as a real surprise and shock to many clients. They come in and they say, this is my spouse. We've been married now for 3 years. We're finally getting around to seeing you, Cecil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're so happy to be here. But we discussed long while we were dating and before we got married that she's going to have all of her wills will say that all of her assets go to her children.
Right.
And mine is going to say the same thing. That's what we want to accomplish. Then I have to explain that because they are married, there will be a percentage of the assets that will pass to the surviving spouse, no matter what their will says.
Automatically, yeah.
Automatically.
Yeah.
Now, if they have a prenuptial agreement, or if they at that time enter into a postnuptial agreement that we prepare that addresses this elective share issue, then we can take care of that. But we can't just take care of it. It's not going to just take care of itself.
Right.
We're
right.
going to have to address it through either one of these postnuptial, prenuptial agreements, or we can certainly utilize a type of spousal trust that will allow the surviving spouse to have, if you will, a life estate or mm-hmm. the use of certain funds for their lifetime, and then upon their death, back to the surviving, back to the children of the prior marriage.
I see the real advantage of that and that spousal trust, because obviously there's a good relationship, probably good relationship with families, but it sort of clearly moves everything, if you will, in order from one family to another without a lot of dispute. And I'm thinking, Cecil, in many instances, the value of a trust also not only assuring the transfer of assets and the benefit of the recipients removes a lot of conflict.
Absolutely.
Which I'm sure from time to time you've had to deal with.
Yeah. No, there's just no question about that. And it sets forth a clear understanding, sets forth a structure, as we're using those words again, a very, very extraordinarily useful tool, Lockwood. Without it, we can have chaos and conflict.
Right.
And, well, but Mom said this. Well, right. Dad said mm-hmm. that. Well, Sister said this. Well, Brother said
right.
that.
Yep.
And we get into these kinds of conflicts. So, absolutely, getting things in order, satisfying these kinds of objectives through the use of a trust instrument can just be invaluable. Now, Lockwood, we're running a little bit close on time. I'm looking. But notice the one that I haven't mentioned. Here comes the trust that I have not mentioned hanging your hat on. And it's called the famous living trust.
Uh-huh.
Okay, how many times have we heard about that?
Right.
Well, Mr. Harvell, I need a living trust. I read on the internet that I need to avoid probate, and I went to a luncheon at the Golden Corral, and I need a living trust, Mr. Harvell, okay? That's what I want to have. Well, Lockwood, we really do have to kind of unwind the information loop on that. We are in the state of North Carolina. These documents that we are preparing are, by their very terminology, will say that they're to be interpreted consistent with the laws of the state of North Carolina. And in the state of North Carolina, here it comes, Lockwood, we are an extraordinarily probate-friendly state. Mm-hmm. We do not have a level of taxation, if you will, at the probate level, like Florida, Illinois, Michigan, Connecticut, California, Texas. Many, many states have a sliding scale cost of probate that is collected at the time that someone dies. We don't have that kind of sliding scale in our state, okay? We also don't seem to have the delay. Our probate laws, our statutes are pro-executor. They are pro-beneficiary. Our clerks of court move the files extraordinarily efficiently. They aren't tied up in a delay process for I hear that, you know, it takes 2 or 3 months to get an appointment after the date of death, just to get an appointment in places like maybe New Jersey or Michigan or Chicago, mm-hmm. places like this. Now, some of that has to do with them being metropolitan areas.
Right.
Here in the state of North Carolina, you know, and in our jurisdiction down here, which includes, you know, Craven and Onslow and New Hanover, Jones, Pender, Carteret County, we send off an estate to be open to get letters testamentary after the death. We send it off on a Monday, and we many times have authority to act as the executor by the following Monday.
Wow.
It's unusual for us not to happen that quickly. Sometimes it even, you know, here in Carteret County with the wonderful organization that that Ken has in place, the clerk of court over in Carteret County, you know, we'll send them over on a Monday or Tuesday and getting them back on a Wednesday or Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it moves very quickly in our state. We don't have an extraordinary level of state transfer probate tax like they do in some states. And so to just place your asset in a, quote, living trust to avoid probate is something that we really need to sit down and talk about. And there need to be, like, for instance, Lockwood, if we have property, let's say we own property in Carteret County. We have then a home in the mountains of North Carolina, in Blowing Rock. We then have a condominium down in Florida, okay? And we have extraordinary, we have a business concern that we're, now maybe we can talk about, will a trust for probate administration purposes for the children, would that make some sense? Would that begin to give us enough evidence to support a trust for that family? But we really do need to find something that is more significant than just simply, well, we have one home, we have the bank accounts, we have some stocks, but we want all of this to avoid probate and put it in a living trust.
Wow. You know, this goes back to the comment, and two items. Number one, you've said at the outset, you need to unwind, if you will, some of the misinformation. Well, I say misinformation based on a general aspect. In North Carolina, obviously, as you pointed out, North Carolina is, as you said, probate friendly. I'll use that term. But the other aspect of this, again, is the need to have, you know, justification for a trust. Cecil, before we wrap it up, real quick question for you. Obviously, in the conversation of a trust, this requires information for you. So real quickly, in your conversations with your clients, how do you approach this? Do you first identify the need, or do they come to you and say, okay, here are some concerns we have? What have you discovered in your conversations with your clients?
We discuss all of these facts and circumstances, okay. Take diligent notes. I sometimes, in an appointment, Lockwood, will call it the pieces of the puzzle.
Right.
And then it's my duty to advise, how do we put the puzzle together?
Okay.
What is the best method to put these pieces of the puzzle together? The pieces of the puzzle being, you know, where are the real properties located? Are they located in different states?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a place in Florida as well as a place here in North Carolina?
Right.
Do we have an ongoing business? What's the nature and the extent of the assets? Are we in a second marriage? Are we in a career marriage, if you will? Are we lucky and blessed enough to be in a marriage of 50 years? With health and safety, then wonderful. But as we know, Lockwood, some people don't have those kinds of blessings. They've lost a spouse through cancer or any other means. And the bottom line is that we have to listen carefully to all of these facts and circumstances, and then place them in documents that really fit and meet the objectives.
Our guest, of course, our host, really, of the program, Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins, as we've just heard, the value of trust. But to benefit you, the client, and all of you listening to the program, consider first and foremost the need for a trust, and the best way to accomplish that is to make a phone call or contact Harvell & Collins. And again, that phone call, number 252-726-9050, or via email at Harvell and Collins, but go to the website. Simplest way to do this, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, great program, and I think a very informative one for our audience. Thanks again for your time this afternoon here on Let's Talk Legal.
Thank you, Lockwood.